Well, good morning. We have 7:41 on the clock, and it's a Wednesday, and that means it's time for our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension on our Green Setup program. And joining us, we have David Rowling in studio. Good morning, David. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. So I know you keeping busy here with all the tasks that seem to be at hand this spring. You know, it's just a busy time for people.
Yes, it's a very busy time. I know March just flew by. For me, so I can't believe it's April already, and we have some upcoming programs in April. Of course, our homesteading series continues through April and into the first couple weeks of May, so there's still time for folks to get in on that. And tomorrow evening, I will be doing the next session of the homesteading series over in Pittsburgh, and it will be on backyard chickens, and Holly will be joining me to talk about different ways you can store extra eggs that you might get. And this one is actually free to attend thanks to funding from the Wildcat District Foundation. And then other upcoming topics we have for this series are raising goats, soap making, fermentation, grazing, and canning. So if folks would like more information on that, they can visit our website at wildcatdistrict.kstate.edu/homesteading series.
Okay, well, excellent. Appreciate that, David. And, you know, as we get into the spring here, I'm seeing something that I have not seen actually since I've lived here in Southeast Kansas, and that is the fact that some of the ponds are actually full.
Yes, it is nice to see. I hope we continue to get a couple good, more good rains, because I know some of the bigger ponds are still a little low, but we're definitely headed in the right direction. And it's cooled off a little bit now, but for a while we had warmer weather and warmer temperatures at night as well. So I have already gotten a few questions on controlling algae and pond weeds. Those are kind of getting an early start this year. In this colder weather and colder nights we've had this week, we'll probably knock that algae and weeds back a little bit. But I just wanted to cover a couple of questions that I have gotten. And the first question is that if there's any pre-emergent aquatic herbicide, so to speak, that you can apply to ponds to keep the weeds from coming on, kind of like you would, you know, your lawn or your pasture or a field. And unfortunately for ponds, there's not. Related to that line of thought, your best bet to prevent weeds, of course, is to maintain a healthy pond, but there are aquatic dyes you can get that you can add to your pond, and those just limit the amount of sunlight that goes through the water surface, which the less sunlight those weeds get, the less they'll be able to grow or really take off and overtake your pond. So that's the closest thing to a pre-emergent herbicide you can do for your pond. If you've kind of had problems with your pond every year of getting some sort of algae or weed in overabundance, and your pond doesn't get a lot of water movement naturally from wind because of where it's setting, you can also look into adding an aerator to your pond. That's a little bit more costly of an option, but depending on how big your pond is, there's some smaller aerators that are a little bit more affordable. And then once we kind of get into the continually warmer weather and treating those pond weeds, one of the reasons why there's really no pre-emergent and that's not recommended for pond weeds is because you never really know what type of weeds your pond's going to have until that year. I've spoken to people who, you know, one year they'll have a lot of problems with algae on their pond, and then the next year they won't have a lot of algae, but they may have more problems with pond weeds. So it's not set in stone that the problem plants you had in your pond last year are going to be the problems again this year. And there's a couple different classes of pond weeds or pond plants. They're considered weeds when there's that overabundance. And these are broken into algae. Of course, you have the regular filamentous green algae and the blue-green algae that we hear a lot about during the heat of summer. And you have floating plants, which true floating plants aren't attached to the bottom of the pond. They mainly just float on the water surface and may have a few roots hanging down. Submerged plants are rooted plants with most of their leaf mass below the water surface, and you will get a little bit of their leaves sticking up above the water. So you usually only notice these if there's a big population, so they do start to appear a little bit above the water, or they're in shallower water around the bank where it's easy to see them. And emergent plants are rooted plants, most often along the shoreline, but they sit above the surface of the water. So cattails and lily pads are examples of these. And depending on what type of pondweed you're dealing with is going to make a difference on what type of aquatic herbicide will work best. And there's also a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but there are other options for getting rid of weeds on your pond other than herbicides as well. So you can manually remove them using a pond rake or kind of a pond spear. That's a little bit more labor intensive, but it does work out well, especially on smaller ponds. And then sometimes stocking your pond with grass carp will help reduce the number of weeds as well. Now, grass carp won't eat all pond weeds, so they're kind of picky, just like we can be. You know, they like some better than other. They kind of have their favorite foods, so to speak, but they will help reduce the number of some weeds, especially those rooted weeds.
I was going to ask you, is there such a thing as, you know, some sort of fish would be like a aquatic goat that would eat all the weeds?
Yeah, grass carp are the closest. Unfortunately, they won't just eat like everything, so to speak. But if you want to stock your pond with some of those, I know that as the ponds are filling back up, some folks are looking into stocking their ponds again. And you can start out with about 3 to 5 grass carp an acre.
Okay. I was going to ask you about the rate of, you know, of that and the general rule of thumb, because obviously we don't want to get too many in.
Right. Yeah. And grass carp, the ones that are legally sold in Kansas, they're not able to reproduce because they're a non-native fish. So, of course, we don't want them reproducing and then getting out of the ponds in to the creeks and rivers. So they'll just kind of hang out in your pond, and they will grow and get bigger, but they won't reproduce.
Where does a person get a fish like that? Is there, I know obviously the wildlife and parks take care of our state, but just contacting, you know, fisheries, I would assume, on that sort of thing.
Yeah, and there's a couple fisheries over in the Pittsburgh area, right over the state line in Missouri. But more locally, Coffeyville Feed and Farm, they have a fish truck that usually, once it gets a little bit warmer, they usually come about once a month, once every other month, and bring up fish that people can buy to stock in their ponds.
Oh, great. Very cool. We should have one in here. I think that'd be fun, have a tank. It probably wouldn't live very long.
Might need
us
a pretty big tank.
Excellent. Well, that's really good information. Anything else we should know about this, David, as we kind of, obviously, it's going to be one of those things where I'm sure we're going to revisit this topic in like August or something. When
yes.
Other pond-related topics.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I'll just mention real quick is that, so a healthy pond will have plants or weeds, as some people call them, to some extent, and that's normal. You want some in your pond, especially if you have fish, because that is just part of the natural habitat of your pond. But when those plants start to overtake the pond is when they start to become weeds, and then we want to start looking at the different control options.
Excellent. Well, that is a good reminder there, David. If folks do, of course, have questions for you about ponds, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling our Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
Excellent. All righty. Well, I appreciate that, David. And then coming up in our next segment, we are going to have Wendy Palin. Wendy, what are we going to be talking about next?
Good morning. We are going to discuss calving seasons and the options of calving year-round versus tightening up that calving season to a month or two.
Excellent. Very good. Well, that will be a good topic. Looking forward to that. So we have 42 degrees right now and more coming up as our Green Side Up program continues here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Back here on the Mighty 690 at 810, and we continue our Green Side Up program brought to you by the folks at Green Acres here in Coffeyville. And we are joined once again by David Rowling and Wendy Powell. Good morning again, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, Wendy, you're heading up this segment here. And first of all, do you have any events that you'd like to tell us about that are on the calendar?
Yes. So on Saturday, there's going to be a Southeast Kansas Grazing and Forage School, and that's going to take place over in Parsons at the Research and Extension Center right there on Highway 400. We're going to talk about cool season grasses and the economics of grazing design. So it's going to be a really great meeting. 8:30 to 4, lunch provided. So come on over and take part in that educational opportunity. It is $15, but there are going to be some walking away handouts and things like that. So that'll be a really great program Saturday. And if you've got any questions, definitely give us a call to the Altamont office. And that number is 620-784-5337. So that's the Grazing and Forage School on Saturday. But I wanted to mostly talk today about a more defined calving season. So a lot of folks, they have their cow herds, and if they're not able to pull their bull out throughout the year, then we might have calves hitting the ground all year long. And, well, you know, there are, I can think of two benefits to that, that management practice. And one is you don't have to pull the bull, so you don't necessarily have to find another place to put the bull. And then also, whenever you need some extra cash flow, you can just go out to the pasture and load up a couple of calves and take them to the sale barn. So that flexibility, I guess, is beneficial in some operations. But when we dig into that financially and with the genetics of a herd, it doesn't always make the most sense.
And so, because so many people have, you know, gotten into the whole synchronization and just trying to do everything at a set time, and usually the calves are dropping in the middle of winter. But I know there's reasons for that. So let's get into what's about a little bit of maybe research on this subject and all of that.
Yeah, so lots of research has been done on this topic. So 394 ranches across Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma were covered, and they did find a direct relationship between the breeding season length and the production cost of each 100 pounds of calf weaned. So the longer the breeding season, the higher the cost of production. So that study was done in 2004, so with our prices the way things are now, that's going to be even more extreme.
Oh, sure. Gotcha. So, I mean, how does a defined calving season, how does that actually add value to the calves themselves?
So the calves are going to be easier to give timely vaccinations for, actually apply those management practices that we stress, like dehorning, castration, before you send cattle on down the road. Whenever you have a group that is all the same, then you can actually give the shots at 6 weeks or at branding time. You can wean at the appropriate time, and all of the calves are together in that cohort or that contemporary group. So rather than having two here and three there, and you're having to vaccinate these two head this week, and 2 weeks down the road, you've got three more to do. So it just kind of puts everything together. So those management practices are easier to implement.
You're not having to go and buy, you know, vaccinations every time. You can just kind of get one group of them all done at the same time. It's, you know, exactly. Just like any job, we kind of like to be able to do it all in one fell swoop rather than having to chip away at it, you
yes.
know, just a little bit.
Yes, exactly. It also puts these groups together with similar aged calves. And at the market, then there is a huge value increase for that. So the group is more uniform in size and maybe in color if you've got specific bulls that you're working with. And this is very well documented. Larger groups at the market sell better than ones and twos. So whenever you're selling small groups, twos, threes, fours, they'll do fine. And that might fit what your financial operation has in mind. But groups of 15, 20, they sell a lot better, bigger.
Gotcha. And then I guess the question is, can the small producers, you know, like you said, that can work okay for some. It just really depends on, you know, what your operation is. Some people just, you know, if you got maybe just a few head, I feel like maybe this wouldn't be as applicable, perhaps?
Yeah, so the Oklahoma Beef Quality Network actually took a look at that in 2016, and they were showing that going from selling one head at a time to five, so an increase of five, an increase from one to five calves sold at a time, they showed a profit of $17 a head at Oklahoma auctions. So whenever you went up to 10 head in a lot, then you were seeing more of a $25 increase in value. So even these smaller groups, we can definitely tell that there's a profit there.
Well, that is surprising. And so that is, even if you do have a smaller operation, you know, trying to get everything clumped a little bit more together, mm-hmm. it does seem to be paying off. So how would a producer begin that transition from, if you're, you know, the folks right now who maybe they're just calving year round, but they want to make that transition to a shorter season, what does that look like?
Yeah, so it's a little bit stressful, of course, the transition, because you worry that you're going to lose out on some calves between whenever you're going from a full year calving to a shorter season. But the question I would put to folks with that concern is, are you certain that every cow has calved every 365 days? Instead of, well, she was kind of late bred this year, and so she calved a couple months later than she did last year. And a cow's gestation is 9 months, just like humans. And so they are able to produce a calf every year. And so keeping those records would be one way to tell you if she's calving every year. But whenever we start to look at the season, with all of the benefits financially, it's so much more economical. So if you are going to shorten a calving season, then the biggest part of it is planning to pull the bulls at the right time and having a place to go with your bulls. Or if you're leasing a bull, making for sure you know exactly what time of year you want that bull exposed in your herd. So having a place to get rid of the bull or have him put away, that's the biggest barrier most of the time. So whenever you're trying to figure out what time of year to actually have your calving season, you want to look at your forage value. Your cows are in their highest need right after calving, whenever they are milking heavy and raising that newborn. So you want to match that time of year with when your forage is the best. So whenever it's growing, or when you can afford to bring in hay the most economically. But most of the time in our neck of the woods, that's when forage is growing, which is why we have a lot of spring calving herds. A lot of our grass is coming on now, and so right now is when we've got calves hitting the ground. So whenever you're transitioning, keep track of which cows have calved. Pairing the cow with the calf is very important so that you know which cows are not producing or pulling their weight, really. And those cows are the ones that need to go on down the road. If you have this scenario and you're wanting to shorten your calving season, I'd be happy to work with folks, so they can certainly give me a call. It's definitely a long-term plan. And sometimes if you're calving year-round, maybe you need to do two calving seasons, a spring and a fall, or a spring and a summer, or something like that. But having those clear divisions in your management will help you with profits at the end of the day.
Well, that is really good to know, and I know that you know, many folks may be interested in perhaps making that transition. So it does sound like it's definitely a profitable thing to think about, even though, yeah, maybe getting there might be a little bit of a challenge. And I think it's so interesting that, you know, I didn't exactly know the reason for, you know, that timing and everything. So you just kind of, like you said, you gotta kind of pick that time of year, subtract 9 months basically.
Yes.
And then you'll get that. But I know, you know, seems like, you know, we hear about some of the calving that happens here. I mean, we'll have calf dropping. It's like in February and stuff. I mean, we'll have in some of those cold months. And to me, it seems like that would be something that we would want to avoid. But some producers, they may not be synchronizing things as much. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of when it happens. But is there a reason why someone would want to do that a little bit earlier into the year? Do some people do that intentionally?
Yeah, so every operation is different. So if you are working off the farm and maybe February is your light time of work off of the farm, maybe that's when you have the most availability to check those calving cows, and you can stay on top of those if there's problems. Maybe February is your time frame that you're available.
Sure.
Another reason, you know, depending on what you want to do with those calves, if they are going to showing with fairs and livestock shows, then maybe you need that animal to be a certain age. Or maybe you have an operation where you are direct selling beef and you need your mature, ready to harvest animals at a certain time of year, and you've subtracted those months, and that puts you in a February calving season. So there's lots of reasons to have those intentional dates, but it does need to be intentional. That's
sure.
The key word,
yes,
there.
Yes, that is right. Let's actually do some planning here. So yeah. That's good. Wendy, if folks have questions for you, maybe they want to kind of put a plan here in place, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, give me a call at the Altamont Labette County Extension Office, 620-784-5337.
Okay, excellent, Wendy. We appreciate that update there. And David, want to let you just remind us here of some of those upcoming, we've got the homesteading seminars and everything coming up. What do we have on the way?
Yeah, we still have quite a few opportunities for folks to get in on our homesteading series tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. I'm going to be covering backyard chickens, and Holly will be joining me to talk about different techniques of egg storage. So folks can still join in on that one tomorrow night at the Pittsburgh Library at 6:00. And then other topics we still have coming up for that series are raising goats, soap making, fermentation, canning, and grazing techniques. And for more information on those, they can visit our website, wildcatdistrict.kstate.edu, or give me a call at our independence office, 620-331-2690.
All right. Well, very good. We have a diversified ag agent, Adavin Rowling, and livestock production agent, Wendy Powell. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And we have coming up next a check of Kansas Profile on the way here, and then we'll be getting into Open Line right after a check of Fox News here. 43 degrees right now in Coffeyville.